Thank you all. So now we'll move to the regular council calendar. We have some communication items queued up, and if you'd start with the first of those, 293, please, Carla.
Item 293, request of Paul Sively to address council regarding update on Portland's sister city relationship with Mutare Zimbabwe.
Paul, come on up. I think he's here. No, maybe not. All right, we'll see if he comes later. Let's move on to the next one then, please.
Item 294, request of Steve Unger to address council regarding non-owner-occupied short-term rentals in residential zones.
Good morning, Steve. Welcome.
Good morning. I certainly have enjoyed the inspirational opening of this meeting. It's been terrific.
Thank you. We have to.
I'm here to talk to you about something more mundane. It's the problem of fitting a large foot into a small shoe. Last Thursday, when Airbnb announced that Portland was to be its initial shared city, Mayor Hales scored a huge victory in having Portland become the first city in the world for whom Airbnb agreed to remit lodging tax. However, now that Portland has moved into the spotlight, it is more important than ever that Portland develop a comprehensive short-term rental policy that addresses all Airbnb rentals, as has Austin, Texas. Unfortunately, the Recap 6 proposal draft covers only 40% of Airbnb rentals in Portland. That is private room rentals in single-family homes and duplexes that are the primary residence of the operator. Recap 6 does not address over 400 unsupervised Airbnb entire place rentals, any Airbnb rental in a multifamily building, and any vacation rental listings on VRBO, HomeAway, and FlipKey. The Bureau of Planning and Sustainability says that these rentals will simply continue to be illegal, which is to say that they will only be closed down when a complaint is filed. Yet it is difficult to file a complaint because all the major websites intentionally mask the address associated with the rental. So far, Airbnb horror stories have usually involved property damage in entire place rentals, but eventually there will be a fire, injury, or loss of life. Then Airbnb will have a true horror story. In a real sense, Airbnb's future is a serious accident waiting to happen. Since hundreds of the entire place rentals are in operation, I request that City Council mandate and fund the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to deal with the entire place rentals, just as numerous other cities have in their vacation rental ordinances. If not, then City Council needs to mandate and fund the Bureau of Development Services Compliance Group to actively pursue and enforce the current prohibition rather than wait for a complaint or catastrophe. Also, as part of its partnership with Airbnb and in exchange for implementing a reasonable licensing process, the city needs to have Airbnb provide the name and address of their advertisers to assist the city in reasonable compliance activities. Airbnb could do this with a one-sentence addition to their 43 pages of terms and conditions, and doing so would not really endanger Airbnb's basic business model. In a sense, we need to get a shoe that's big enough to address the problem. Do you have any questions?
Well, thank you very much. And you've probably had a chance to see the Planning Bureau's proposal and, you know, let us hear your thoughts as that develops.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay, next person on the list.
Item 295, request of Annie Mirabona to address council regarding Fat Fancy, a plus-size clothing store.
Mirabona, you're here? Oh, yes. Come on up. Good morning.
Before they speak, Mayor, working with Venture Portland, we have been encouraging some of our local neighborhood small businesses to periodically come to council and talk a little bit about what they're doing and the challenges they face and programs they may be accessing the city. And it's a little difficult with our agenda because it's booked so many months forward.
We're glad
that these folks took time out from their busy lives to be with us this morning.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. We'd like to thank the City Council for having us this morning. It's an honor, and we thank you for giving us a chance to talk about our business. My name is Carly Smith. I'm co-owner of Fat Fancy. And Fat Fancy is a plus-size vintage and modern clothing store, and we carry both styles for men and women, located in downtown Portland. At Fat Fancy, we've reclaimed the word fat. We believe the word fat is a neutral descriptive term, and we both identify as fat proudly. The business that we created is governed by fat positive and body positive values, and it was created out of a need to provide unique, stylish, and affordable clothing to people of all sizes.
Our first sale was in my studio apartment. I pushed in my Murphy bed and cleared out all my belongings and brought in clothing racks and filled them with fabulous plus size clothing. From there, we moved to a friend's basement where we set up an underground clothing boutique and had sales once a month, and we saved every cent from these sales to open a brick-and-mortar storefront.
In December of 2009, we opened the storefront of our dreams on Southwest Morrison Street, right on the edge of the West End and on the edge of the Pioneer District. We've been in the storefront for 4 years and have recently expanded to sell our clothing online. And currently, we ship nationally with the hopes to ship internationally. We do have a devoted global fan base that is eager to get their hands on our clothing.
We're both queer, low-income Latina women, and some might say that we're unlikely business owners. We're really proud of our 6-going-on-7-year-old business. We've had national and international press. We've been in the Oregonian, the New York Times, and the Guardian. We've had celebrity customers like Adele and Cameron Manheim, Beth Ditto, and Leslie and Elias. But our proudest accomplishments are the ones that happen every day when we make someone feel comfortable in their skin, maybe for the first time ever, because when you're wearing an outfit that you feel good in, you really are more empowered in the world.
Our community here in Portland has been the driving support for us to start our business. Coming from New York, I realized that Portland was a special place, and I don't think that our business could have grown the way it did anywhere else. From the friends who rented us their basement for $100 a month, and the friends who donated equipment, and the services and the support that the city has to offer small businesses, we knew that Portland was special. We were so lucky to have access to resources like Mercy Corps Northwest, the Lewis and Clark Small Business Legal Clinic, and of course the Portland Development Commission Storefront Improvement Grant. These resources have been essential to our success, and we are eternally grateful for them. We love the other businesses on our block and have found community with them. We encourage our customers to patronize their stores and restaurants. We've done events where we've cross-promoted and developed a safety phone tree to reach out to each other if we feel unsafe. The Clean and Safe have helped us several times, and we feel better knowing that they're around.
It's definitely a challenge being a small business owner. We never know from month to month if we're going to make enough money to get by. Sometimes parking downtown prohibits us from getting customers. Our biggest struggle, however, is finding the capital we need to invest in our business, and we're researching different ways to do this, and we work as hard as we can to make ends meet. We love what we're doing, and we know it's important for us and for the city to be here doing what we do. We thank you for the opportunity to speak with you and for all you do for the city. We really appreciate it. We're so grateful that we have these resources in Portland that have helped us and made our business possible.
That's great. Thank you. And appreciate the connections of how these things are working. In your search for capital, have you yet, maybe PDC has connected you with a group called Albina Opportunities Corporation?
No.
I'll make sure that they get in touch.
And, Mayor, when we take up the PDC budget, part of an action this council did 2 years ago is we took the $5 million of general fund support for economic development citywide, and we made it ongoing. And a small portion of that is access to capital, a revolving loan fund.
Mm-hmm.
It's less than $200,000 currently, but my hunch is that this council over time is going to want to see that grow so that there is essentially like a line of credit you can get from the city for short-term needs at moments when you have cash flow problems. And maybe you don't have the same options with a local bank. So perhaps that's something we can put on our future agenda.
Yeah, good idea.
That is something that would help us very much.
Good.
Yeah, we'll look into both of those. Could you please tell us the street address and the website address?
Absolutely. We are located at 1013 Southwest Morrison Street, and that is right on Morrison between 10th and 11th.
Right, across from the City Target.
And what's your website for people to look up?
Our website is www.fancyfashions.com.
Thanks for asking.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
You.
The time. Thanks for taking the time to come here with us today, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thanks. You know, Commissioner Fritz and I were at the Northeast 42nd Avenue meeting earlier this week, and it's just another case of where, you know, we're trying to work with an amazing small business environment where people have chosen, as she has, to come from New York to here and start a small business. So I'd just love to hear that progress. So thank you very much. Okay, next one, please.
Item 296, request of Lucinda Carlick to address council regarding housing for the homeless.
Good morning. Welcome. Okay.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council. My name is Lucinda Carlick, and I reside on Hayden Island. I'm the chair of Hayden Island Livability Project, and I'm also on High Noon, Hayden Island network organization, community organization. As I'm not in your homes on a Sunday evening, I don't know if you catch 60 Minutes, but I saw this. This is the transcript I've handed you of the February 9th 60 Minutes, and it's a program where they are taking. They're trying to raise 100,000 homes, and they literally give them to the homeless rent free, and it is actually saving cities an enormous amount of money, because when a homeless person is out on the street in the winter, they average between 2 and 4 visits to an emergency room, hospital stays, and the city and the taxpayers pick up all this cost. And if you do this right, a unit for a homeless person can cost the city around $5,000 a year versus $100,000 in medical care. I'm very nervous. You'll have to excuse me.
No, you're fine. Don't be.
I personally stayed on the streets of London for 4 nights once, waiting for a Freddie Laker flight. I can tell you, those were the most miserable nights of my life. And I did that by choice. You take for granted that there are restrooms, there's a shower, there's food. These people... just, it's a daily thing for them. 4 nights was all I could take. I was so glad to get on a plane and come back to the States, where I had a home. Now I've lost my thought. Sorry. It's cost more for us to walk by a homeless person on the street than it does to put them in a home. And in New York, many places they have dedicated buildings. They also have landlords that are donating a percentage of their units and their apartments for this project. If you go to the 60 Minutes website and watch the video, because it is online, there are many resources there that explain why this program works. And they're doing it in New York. They're doing it in Tennessee. Atlanta, it's a benefit to everybody, this program, because we have a definite problem here. And do you have any questions?
Oh, this is great. Thank you.
Ms. Clark, I just have a comment. February 9th was the last significant day of the big snowstorm we had. And that Sunday morning, I picked up Roseanne Haggerty at her hotel and took her halfway to her destination. And she is the executive director of 100,000 Homes. She was in Portland talking about maybe doing, transplanting the idea here. And as you know from the 60 Minutes piece, one of the big pushbacks in communities is, should we be housing people that have an active drug addiction? And this is the most challenging part of the housing first philosophy. And the view is, if you do house them and give them a chance to get this treatment they need, it's not only good for the person, but it saves society a fortune. The pushback is, some people, I think, misguidingly think that you're rewarding someone for an addiction by giving them housing. And so I thank you for coming here this morning, but I hope you stay engaged in this issue, because there's a big debate in our community as to whether through Housing First we should take people with active drug addictions and give them housing. The evidence supports that policy because it actually gives them a better chance of becoming sober or clean. And it saves the system a lot of money that otherwise gets spread out around fire and emergency rooms and the like. But that is an active debate, and it happens. It's flaring up right now at Bud Clark Commons, where so-called wet housing. So this model does work. It has been proven to save money, and those costs otherwise get externalized on everybody. But at the heart of this is a debate about whether people that have drug addictions should also be given housing. The city has decided the answer is yes, but we're heavily criticized for that, so I hope you stay engaged in that discussion.
Well, I that's why I'm here, because I believe that it doesn't matter if they go get treatment. They need to be off the street. It is beneficial for everyone. Your business owners out here complain constantly. I live on Hayden Island. It's a small island of 2,000 people, and we have a problem with homelessness there. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a massive problem. And I some people would say, you know, well, more homeless will come here. I don't see our homeless going there, so I don't think that's an issue.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
That too.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
And please keep saving West Hayden Island, because I have a feeling the port's coming back at you with an oil terminal, and I don't want to see it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, one more communication. Actually, two more if Mr. Sibley showed up, but let's do Mr. Karlick first.
Item 297, request of Stefan Karlick to address council regarding promote Hayden Island as a destination, not a drive-through.
Good morning, Stefan. Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor Hales, City Council members. The subject I'm supposed to be talking to you about is cleaning up Hayden Island. And I'm going to touch on that. This could be my last presentation to you guys, so I want to touch on a few things very quickly. The entry to Portland and Oregon at Hayden Island is pretty shameful. My wife and I have traveled across the country in our motorhome, and you can't read the sign at night. And during the day, it is barely readable, and it says, "Welcome to Oregon," with all the dirt that's on the sign. And I would encourage the City Council and ODOT to clean that area up and make Oregon and Portland a welcoming opportunity. The pictures I've given you here is a follow-up on the hunting issue I had with West Hayden Island. Yeah, the pictures here, we've just heard all the wonderful things about Portland. Unfortunately, I feel like the harbinger of bad news. These three pictures are three separate deer that were shot, killed, just for the sake of killing, and the carcasses left to rot. I've been in contact with Oregon State Police, Speaker Kotek, and Oregon State Police are investigating this, and everybody is telling me that the only way to remedy this is to change the law on hunting. I don't think that putting the law in that where there's no hunting allowed within 5 miles of a residential area, when you consider the 30-06 bullet will travel 5 miles, any one of these killings out here on the island could have been a pass-through, and we're just waiting for something bad to happen. We really need the state to change the hunting laws. I'm also on the understanding that this is going on in Sandy, and we need you guys to pick up and go to the state about it. The other thing I want to talk about quickly is the dumping of contaminated spoils on West Hayden Island. The second page you have here is dated 2010, and beneficial use is the term that is used currently for dumping the spoils on West Hayden Island. Wendy Wiles, DEQ's land quality administrator at the time, concluded that prospects for industrial use are reasonably likely and dumping is justified. We need that changed. We need you guys to get ahead of the ball here. beneficial use should be used for approved sites, not reasonably likely sites, and not used to contaminate clean sites and natural areas. And we would like the port to remove what is already there or cap it and restore the area. The next subject is the oil train terminal at Klatskanai. It has been hit with a $117,000 fine by Oregon DEQ. They had a permit for moving 50 million gallons of crude oil. That is the same oil on the trains that exploded with death, destruction. And that was the residents of Portland should. We need an oversight on DEQ, and we need to know what the trains are carrying for emergency response team responses. Last year, the company moved 300 million gallons of this oil through Portland, Vancouver, and they are trying to. The terminal is now seeking an air pollution permit that would allow to move 1.8 billion gallons of oil annually.
Stephen,
and that's only expected to increase.
All right, thank you very much for bringing all this to our attention. You've used your time, but I see you've also got something about the Longshoremen Union, so just a word about that, please.
Yes, we need to get this resolved. I'm not anti-port, but the port is destroying itself internally. We need to get this resolved. Oregon needs the ships of the size that come. We're not a deep water terminal, but we need to maintain what is here. And on that note, there is no need for future development on West Haden Island of a deep water port unless they're going to bring oil or coal, which has been suggested by Port of Portland.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. And did Paul Sively arrive? Apparently not. Okay. So let's move on to...